At California Psychics, we know that sometimes you can wake up thinking,
ugh, I don't know if I'm in the right career. Ew. Or the right relationship.
But whatever your life dilemma, at California Psychics, we'll give you the guidance you need to feel certain about your life choices. And because we only connect you with the very best, we guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. California Psychics. Call 1-800-PREDICT today and get 20 minutes for just $20.
And welcome to another Spits and Suds one-timer. I'm Gavin Spittle of 105.3 The Fan, and big time Stick Tap for all your support this off season. Unbelievable. We're getting regular season numbers in the off season, and that's because of you. And because of that, we're doing more episodes, and boy, do we have a great one for you today. It's an awesome reunion of sorts as the winningest coach in Allen American's history, Steve Martinson, is back this season as the head coach and general manager of our Allen Americans. He brought four cups to Allen in his 10 years here. We have so much to get into, include a heck of a playing career that I don't know if a lot of you know what a career Steve Martinson had as a player, because we all know him as a coach. 15 teams in 7 professional leagues, including the NHL. So the stories and the fun are about to flow. But welcome back to DFW, Coach.
Thanks. It's nice to be back. It's been a while, so it was nice to get back in town.
I mean, hockey aside, was it the Texas barbecue that brought you back?
You know what? I really do like Texas barbecue.
Nice.
I'm big on that, and I had Texas Roadhouse because on the road, but now we like our barbecue.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, Allen is such a good community to live in, and you embrace the community for all your years. And, you know, you had a great season. You were with you were actually coach of the year with Athens, the Rock Lobster. So you had a good year. But kudos to Miles and Lasonia Jack, the new ownership of Allen, for getting you back.
Yeah, I'd been talking to Miles for a while, and he came out and watched the game and really liked the way the team played and talked to a lot of my players. But we've been talking. I kind of told him, I said, you know, if I owned a team, this is what I'd do. And whether they were going to, because I had a deal there and we liked it there. But, you know, I was just like, hey, because at the time originally, you know, if when they were with Zoyer, I knew there was no chance of me coming back because the main guy with Zoyer, Joe Ernst, was an ex-official head of officials with the referees. And to say that we don't get along very well is an understatement. So once he got rid of them, kind of opened up the door for me to come back.
And you mentioned when you were leaving Athens, and kudos to them. They embraced you. You embraced them. But that you were going back to a place that you had unfinished business. Dive into that if you could. What do you mean by unfinished business with Allen?
Well, you know, we were a powerhouse in the league, and it was frustrating because, you know, it had to go back. Now, Miles is in a whole new category of an ownership than anything that we had in the past. And, you know, you have to go back to when Mark Miller ran the team for about 6 months. Even though he didn't own the team, he'd kind of taken it over and was treating everybody the way you want to be treated. And then you know, then we were bought by the Stevens brothers, and the idea there, they wanted to flip the team and make money. And so, you know, we were always kind of like the redheaded stepchild. And then when Jack came in, you know, he screwed up all my affiliations every year because of the way he operated. And it was really frustrating going out, you know, the way we did. And then, you know, I'd heard from some of the players that, you know, Miles wanted to do everything that he legally could, you know, to help the team win. And it was completely different than what we were like before when we couldn't get sticks and skates. And it was really frustrating leaving, you know, after having so many winning years. And then to come back and the situation that we're in now it's kind of night and day to what it was like before.
Yeah, you dove right in, and a couple of captains signed immediately. Familiar names are coming back to Allen. Spencer Osichuk and Colton Hargrove, too. Veterans of the East Coast League that provide a lot of veteran leadership for you.
And, Spencer's been there forever. And he was, I signed him way back in the day. And he's a big power forward. He wins faceoffs. He's really good in front of the net. And, he scored 17 goals last year. And he hits everything and finishes every check. And if you haven't watched this play, and if you watch the Panthers play, that's our style. And we played that long before the Panthers played that way. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I just tell players when I'm talking to them, if that's your style, that's the way Allen plays, when I was there. And, we want to be a really good mix between skill and speed. And that's, skill, speed, and physicality. And the one thing you get with Hargrove is you get it all. I thought, when I'd seen him play a couple of years ago, I remember talking to the Chicago Wolves in the AHL, and I'm like, he's the best player I'd seen in the league in several years. And he just does it all. He's a big, strong guy and can carry the puck, score goals, finish checks, and a great leader.
And this year, a new wrinkle, and we have to have a dual bobblehead night because you guys signed twins, defenseman Anthony Constantini and a real nice goaltender, Marco Constantini. Can we just call them the Hanson brothers to sell some tickets?
Well, I save a little money. I told him, I said, just let me know which guy gets the bottom bunk. And you could probably just do one bobblehead because they're identical twins, I think.
That's
looking
amazing.
At their hockey ID, DB. But I've had some twins in the past.
Really?
I used to say, well, we had the Ludwig brothers. And then I had two guys that led the league in scoring. Not in Allen, but I had them when I was in Elmira, the Donati brothers. And I used to call them the evil twin and the not quite as evil twin. So it's nice to get some twins back. And it's a different, they have a whole different lifestyle, those twins, from growing up. And so it's good to have a couple in the lineup again.
I wanted to ask you about the East Coast Hockey League because I've always admired it. And it's changed a bit. And one of the things that I think's changed is the emergence of college hockey, where a lot of NHL teams now are putting their players in college or embracing the fact that these kids are going to college. How has that necessarily changed the league as far as prospects making it to the NHL?
Well, the league has always had guys move up and make it to the NHL. Some of them are draft picks that start out in the league, but some of them are independent players that we had a guy our first year, our goalie, he made it from Allen to all the way to the NHL. But with college players, like most NHL GMs have their kids play college hockey because you can play longer. And if you only play junior, now things have changed for this now, because now junior guys are eligible to play NCAA. But in
right.
the past, if you played junior hockey, you couldn't play NCAA. And the Canadian colleges are good, but they're not like the NHL colleges. So you've always had guys, because if you played college hockey, you don't have to turn pro at 20. And some guys are late bloomers. Some guys physically aren't, some guys are grown men at 18, and some guys, have to be in the weight room. So there's always been a lot of college guys playing, but now because the money is so good in the NHL, pretty much everybody tries to play that's any good, tries to go pro and tries to make it. Cause I think the minimum salary is like $800,000 or something now. So, it's there's a lot of college guys playing.
And you had Jordy Benn that played for you in Allen.
Yeah. So Jordy actually played before I was there.
Oh, okay.
And he did. Yeah. He made it to the NHL and we've had a few tough guys get called up, have played up and over the years, but, even if you're at our level, cause we pay for housing. And so if you're married and have kids, the money jumps up a lot because you're paying for your whole housing and utilities and everything. So, you have a lot more players playing now because of the money.
So as one of the longest tenured coaches in all of hockey, is my research right in that you went from player straight to head coach? Were you an assistant anywhere, or was it San Diego Gulls as a player to a coach?
Yeah, I was actually a financial consultant at Smith Barney when I retired. I went to work for Smith Barney. And I actually met with a guy that I knew he wanted to hire me to coach a roller hockey. They used to have this pro roller hockey.
I remember it.
Yeah, so he wanted to pitch me to coach, and I wanted to open up an account with him. So I ended up taking the job as the coach, and then I eventually was offered the job in San Diego, and I left the brokerage business, and I'm still coaching. But I had never planned on coaching, and this is kind of a funny story. I had played in Montreal with Larry Robinson and Rick Green, and those guys were coaching the Kings. And when I took the job in San Diego, I called up Rick, and I said, "Hey, I just took this coaching job, and I got to get some system. I come up and meet with you guys and see what you're doing." So we sat down for an hour and a half after practice at their practice rink, and I copied down all their systems, and some of them I'm still doing now. And it was funny because Larry came in there after, I should get the story right, but after Keenan was there. And Larry, is a Hall of Famer, and Keenan didn't play. And Larry's like, Keenan had these guys running all over the place and doing all this crazy stuff. And we just kind of calmed because in Montreal back in those days, like Chelios would get in trouble if he went in, rush the puck in. They were so defensive minded. And the game is completely different now with, we like our D jumping in the play, but yeah, even Chelly would get a hard time if he went in too deep in the offensive zone.
I mean, that's Pat Burns, and Jacques Lemaire was part of that coaching staff in Montreal. That was, I mean, we're going to get into that, but I mean, that's pretty amazing. So there wasn't necessarily like a coach that you gravitated towards that. It was kind of fluky then that you got into coaching, because I was thinking of your St. Cloud coach, who was a longtime coach, Charlie Bash, maybe someone like that kind of
Yeah, no, I didn't.
influenced
He
you.
was a baseball player, and he wasn't that very intense. I actually didn't get along very. I mean, he threatened to kick because I used to get like I would get in one fight every year in college, and you weren't allowed to fight, but you'd get, and so he didn't really like my style of play as much. But I made the all NCAA All-Star team, and I was a junior, and he never even told me. And I didn't. So all these couple of guys on the team were celebrating that they made the team, and I led the country in goals that year for Division II. And I was like, I guess I didn't make it. And then I found out a month later I was reading because back then, remember, we didn't have the internet, so it wasn't like all the information was available. And I read an article where they said I was being replaced by a senior from the University of Minnesota, and like he never even told me that I made the All-Star team. So it was kind of crazy.
What did you
But
do?
I went down to his office and I said, "Hey, what?" I remember reading the article and going down there, and I'm like, "Well, wouldn't you think that?" Because I could have played, but I would have been ineligible to play in the playoffs my senior year, so I wouldn't have played. But I thought that they should have allowed me to at least go and be part of the festivities, and he should have included me in it. But and then going to the coaches, like one of the advantages, like I played on a lot of teams, not because I was a problem and got moved. I was just kind of a hired gun and would go to places that needed me, So I moved around because I started late. I didn't start playing pro hockey till I was 24. And so I just kind of bounced around. But the advantage of that is I took a lot of things from a lot of different coaches I had.
Absolutely. And, as a player, you came out of college right into the IHL, which was a great league. Toledo Gold Diggers, which is such a great name. I mean, that is a gem of a name. But how cool is it your first year in pro hockey, you guys raise a cup, right?
Yeah, it was quite a year. I mean, and back in those days, people didn't realize what it was like, the stuff that went on, because we didn't have videotape. You know what I mean? The games weren't really videotaped, and if you got away with something in the game, you got away with it. And nowadays, I tell my players now, the tough guys, I'm like, "I don't want you doing things that get suspended. You don't help your team when you're in the stands." But back in my day, we were just looking. If the referees weren't looking, you could get away with, damn near get away with murder. So it was crazy times back then. I played with a guy that he was eye gouged so bad in a fight that he had to get stitches from the guy's fingernail cutting him. And then he sharpened up, we all had wood sticks, and he shaved his stick up you know, like a blade and speared him in the face and cut him open. Never got suspended. They didn't see the play, but they saw that he was, you know, the guy was bleeding pretty badly from his face, from his cheek, and the guy that my buddy did it to, Paul Tanardini, the guy he did it to, Floyd LaHasse, was in his wedding party when he got married. They were friends and ex-teammates.
Wow.
So you can imagine what it was like back then, but it's a lot better now.
Yeah. And that's probably about, I would say, 7-8 years removed from chicken wire, where they used to use chicken wire.
Yeah. It was, and in Toledo, we had a small rink and we had a really tough team. And, you know, if you like to hit, what I loved about that rink is you didn't have to skate very far to hit somebody. And it was crazy. It was a fun, but now, you know, Toledo, they moved the rink across the river and they got a big, beautiful rink now, but it was a crazy place. When in the visiting locker room, if you leaned over too far tying your skates, you'd bump your head on the guy sitting across from you.
Oh, wow.
It was old.
Yeah,
that old school.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was thinking this because as soon as I was doing some prep for this interview, I saw a Toledo Gold Diggers. I had to go online. I'm going to buy some merch because now they have Gold Diggers merch. But then I started thinking to myself, okay, the Martinson family house, because you've had some amazing logos on your sweater, Allen Americans, which I absolutely love. We have the Gold Diggers. We have the Rock Lobsters, South Stars, North Stars. It can go on and on. I mean, do you have any?
I have some jerseys from the past, but not a lot.
Okay.
I have more jerseys from my teams. And, you know, because my wife runs the team store, so
yep.
You know, every once in a while, I feel like I'm entitled because I'm kind of her, you know, I have to look at a lot of hats and
you're
shirts.
Her model.
Yeah. Well, not so much her model, but I'm a sounding board. And you know, those magazines that you look in the back and you've got to find the difference between the two pictures.
I get
that with hats where I've got to find the difference between, you know, a dozen hats. And sometimes it gets a little tedious, but I just say, okay, I got to get a hat out of this. So every once in a while, I get a little bit of merchandise.
Nice.
So
nice.
That's how I get paid. At least that's how I justify it.
So you win another cup with the Tulsa Oilers in 83-84. I mean, great teammates you had. You had George McPhee, who led Vegas to a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
You had former stars, Grant Ledyard and Dave Barr. You had USA Hockey Hall of Famer John Van Breesbroek as your backstop.
Yeah.
I mean,
my roommate.
Really?
My roommate. So, the team folded. So the league took us over the last 2 months of the season. We played the rest of our games on the road, and then we played all our playoff games on the road, and we went undefeated. We had a really good team.
Wow. I mean, it's amazing watching like highlights of Beezer compared to, I'll use the Stars as an example, like Jake Ottinger, 6'4", 6'5", you know, how good he actually was specifically for his size.
Yeah. And nowadays, those guys don't even, like even Arundel, I mentioned that he played for us as a rookie and made it for the NHL. I mean, Aaron is an undersized goalie, and now, you know, one of the things over the years, I've gotten some goalies from assigned to me that they're 6'5" and they're prospects, but they're not very good. And I'm like, just give me a small goalie that stops the puck.
Yeah.
But because in the NHL, you know, they shoot the puck so well that all things equal, if the goalie's big and one's small, the other goalie's just taking up more space. So it's kind of a no brainer.
Sure.
It's, you know, like I said, all things equal, but yeah, you don't see too many guys like Beezer anymore.
So minus the titles, I'm sure you were asked about the 1 year in Hershey, 85-86, 432 penalty minutes. I mean, that, well done.
Well, so that summer I'd been offered a contract with the Flyers, and that was Hershey. And then I got a call. I hadn't signed the Flyers contract, and I got a call from Edmonton, and Edmonton had beat the Flyers in the championship the year before in the NHL. So the director of player personnel, I tell him, I say, hey, I got this deal from the Flyers. I'm supposed to sign it. And they said, hey, don't sign it. We want to I want to talk to Glenn Sather. So anyway, Glenn Sather gets on the phone. And now I came out of the IHL and the Central League. Central League only had five in Tulsa. We only had five teams. They're all affiliated teams, you know, all AAA teams, but there was not very many teams. And remember, the scouting back then, it wasn't like it is now. So Glenn Sather tells me, he says, "Hey, I've never heard of you, to be honest with you." He goes, "Steve, I've never heard of you, but my scouts tell me you can fight. And Dave Semenko's on his way out, and you can have a crack at him." And anyway, I made the mistake. I should have went there because they traded for Marty McSorley about a month later.
Oh.
And so anyway, I just said, "I'm going to make sure that everybody knows who I am. I'm not going to have another conversation with the GM and have him say, I've never heard of you." So, yeah, I broke that record. And that's one, my fighting majors record, I'll be taking to the grave with me. Nobody will ever break that.
Yet, so nowadays you have off season where guys that are more physical will take boxing classes and kind of learn the art. I mean, back then, did you do that kind of stuff, or was it just you learned on the kind of fly how to do it?
You learned on the job, but I've probably been in 50 street fights. I used to bounce in a bar, and back in those days, you know, I went to school at St. Cloud, and you know, you get a reputation, and then people would challenge you. So you'd go outside and, you know, go outside the bar and go at it. And so I had a lot of those, and so I knew I could take a punch. You know, doesn't matter how tough you are or how fearless you are, you know, or how good of a fighter you are. If you're physically not, you know, lucky enough to take a hard punch, and I got a hard head and I got a big chin, you know what I mean? So I'm hard to hurt. And that's the key to being, like, the year I set the, you know, I had 44 fights, and that's just during the regular season. And nowadays they limit you to 10, you know, and it's for good reason and all that, but you got to be able to take a punch, and especially in those days, because everybody, there's a lot of guys, you know, are on steroids then. And, you know, nowadays, the speed of the game, you don't have these tough guys anymore that are 6'5", 250. You know, you do get some big Canadians, but they're just naturally big. You get some big USA guys, but, you know, back in those days, you had a lot of guys on steroids and a lot of crazy stuff going on. So,
yeah.
We had a lot of fun in Hershey, though. It was a great team, and we lost in the finals that year to Adirondack.
Well, you do end up getting the call to the NHL for 10 games in 87-88, and what a team to be called up. The Detroit Red Wings, Jacques Demers is your head coach, Stevie Eiserman with 102 points that year. And familiar name on this podcast that we talk a lot about, Jim Nill was on that team, but he did get traded midseason to Winnipeg. Did you get to play with Jim?
So no, but I'd loaned a player when Jim to I'd loaned one of our players from Allen to Jim when he was when he was an assistant GM with Detroit and running their Grand Rapids team. But I didn't know Jim when I played. I don't think he was even. I can't remember if he was, like, he might have been there. I got to look that up. I don't remember being really teammates with him.
Yeah,
because then I got hurt. What happened is, I played 10 games, and what they were doing was just calling me up against certain teams. So the teams that we'd fight a lot against in the division, Chicago, St. Louis, Minnesota, and Toronto, they would call me up, and then they would say, well, so when I went down, they told me they were bringing me back in 2 weeks. I'd had some problems with my neck and herniated a disc and herniated again, and then I had a lot of nerve pain. I couldn't play for 2 months, so... that's when I never went back up to
Detroit. I was gonna ask, with 84 penalty minutes in 10 games, were you giving Bob Probert a break?
Well, actually, Proby and I were friends then, and his agent really wanted them to keep me, because the crazy thing about Probert, that, you know, what kind of gets lost in when they talk about who is the toughest guy and, you know, in the league and who is the best fighter, and, you know, Proby not only was a really good fighter, but he was a really good player. And you know, he's kind of in a class all of his own, because he scored 29 goals 1 year. And he had, you know, I think he led the league in penalty minutes that year. But his agent did want me to stay up because he didn't want Bob fighting as much. But Proby was a great, you know, like, Proby liked to fight.
Yeah.
And I told him once, I said, you know, Bobby, you know, most people don't really want to fight you. And all you have to do is make them think that you want to fight. And if you don't put, you know what I mean? But he goes, yeah, I like that. I'm like, you don't have to fight as much as you do. Part of that was self-motivated, because I wanted them to keep me around. But you know what? Proby used to force people's hands way more than he needed to. You know, but He's quite a character.
Was there a player in either the minors or the NHL that you knew you had to fight but didn't necessarily want to? Like the toughest fight that you've had?
Yeah, so like kind of when you get to that level, they're all tough. And what any one of them can hurt you, you know, because Ewan, you know, Byers, you know, Brown, Baumgartner, all those guys, they all have a good punch. And so, you know, really, I learned not to think about it. I didn't, you know, I learned because the guys that think about it too much are the guys that got into trouble with drugs and alcohol, because the problem with fighting is for most people is the thinking about it. And so you got to think, you know, like if you're a pro fighter, you're only fighting maybe twice a year or once, you know what I mean? But, you know, like if you're a hockey fighter, you're fighting every weekend. And you might, there'd be weekends I would have 6 to 8 fights just in one weekend. Wow. And so, and then everybody, when you're the tough guy, everybody you fight is tough. There's never a night where you're like, you know, I used to call it the free night. If they didn't have a tough guy in the lineup, you could do whatever you wanted and nobody could do anything about it. But, you know, I learned, that's what I learned, you know, 2 eyes for an eye, but there's just a lot of guys that, you know, that could hurt you in a fight. If I fought Ben Wilson and Semenko, and I thought Brown, the hardest I'd ever been hit was with from Dave Brown. And, you know, he was a lefty. So if you're fighting him, you're going your strong hand against his strong hand. And when I fought him, I'd had surgery on my neck the year before. And the Flyers doctors approved me. I had nerve damage. I couldn't do one push-up with my right arm. I had a lot of nerve damage, so I lost all the muscle in my right chest and my right tricep. And then the next year when I was fighting in training camp, I noticed I was fighting different. And I said to the doctor, I said, you know, I throw a punch and my arm just kind of sits there instead of just automatically recoiling and throw another one. And he goes, well, you've got nerve damage and it's going to take about a good year, year and a half before you get your full reaction time back. And I'm like, kind of wish you'd have told me that, you know.
Sure.
A little earlier, because I picked a fight with Brown and he was hitting me twice, you know, to my one punch. And then when I was watching it later, I'm like, I'm not really fighting the same.
Yeah.
And I broke my cheekbone in that fight and never got it x-rayed until the next year.
Oh.
And I had a bunch more fights that week, and I was really lucky that I never really got hit in the same spot. And then I'd gotten hit in a fight, and my eye had gotten swelled up a lot. And they said, okay, well, we got to x-ray. And I said, well, you got a broken fractured cheekbone. And I said, well, it doesn't even hurt. And they said, well, did you ever fracture it before? And I said, well, not that I know of, but I said, what does it feel like? And then I said, well, last year I did get hit really good there once, and it did feel a little squishy, and it was pretty sore. But I was just lucky. I had probably 6 more fights that week and never got hit in the same spot, because it would have probably messed me up pretty good.
Yeah.
If it would have hit me there.
But, so with all those bar fights that you had prior, was it relatable as far as what former NHLer Nick Tarnaski went through on the golf course, and that video has gone viral across the US?
I used to caddy. The first time I chipped my tooth was a fight in a caddy shack when I was in 9th grade.
No.
And I was laughing. I was laughing. I said, you know, when I saw that, I'm like, that's nothing that a lot of people that I know wouldn't want to do on the golf course. But I learned to just, I stopped going out to places where I have to deal with people like that I would want to punch. Because I was just like, I can't get in trouble anymore. You know, I can't get in trouble. And I, you know,
it's almost like a boxer. Obviously,
yeah. But it was, I mean, that was crazy. But I've seen a lot of that kind of stuff before, but in, you know, different situations.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So you returned to the NHL in 88, 89. And I just think this is awesome because, you know, you're winning cups in the minors and you're fighting like heck to make it to the NHL. You had 10 games with Detroit, and next team that calls you up is Les Habitants, Montreal Canadiens. And that's amazing that your first two teams are original 6 teams. Must have been pretty special putting on both those sweaters.
Yeah, it was. I mean, and then, you know, with Montreal in the Forum, you know, and the locker room was unbelievable. And Montreal, you know, like we went to the finals against Calgary, and they bring back everybody. Like they bring back all the stars, you know, and so you're meeting these guys you watched play as a kid, and you know, Yvonne Cornway, I remember sitting down having lunch with him, and it was pretty cool. And then Guy Lafleur came, and he was playing for the Canadian for the Rangers, and it was in Montreal, and it was his first game, I guess, since he had not played with the Canadians. And I remember there was a lot of pressure on the team for him to not do well. He ended up getting a hat trick, and we won the game. So the players, because the players all loved him, and they were like, you know, I guess it worked out pretty good. Guy got the hat trick in the home crowd, you know,
Yeah.
and we won the game. So yeah, Montreal was pretty special. It was both, you know, pretty cool. But Montreal is you know, was really cool. And
Yeah.
then like the next year, Larry Robinson was gone, and the tickets that I had to give to, you know, to people were Larry's old seats. So when I would give them to somebody, they were pretty prestigious seats. It was pretty cool.
Nice. And you played 25 games that year. They actually went to the Cup. And just to mention for our listeners, some of the players on that team, you had Chelios, Guy Carboneau, Larry Robinson, as you've mentioned, Bob Gainey, Patrick Waugh, all those guys, Hall of Famers. What was that room like?
Yeah, it was pretty special, and it was funny because, you know, back then we had four lines and me. And so I would not be, and Pat Burns didn't play. So one thing, you know, when you pick up things from coaches, I've never done that to a player ever in my life as a coach. If we have one extra player, I put four guys on one line. And, you know, that line just takes an extra shift in every drill that you do. The next year, they did it to a guy that ended up scoring. He led the American League in scoring, and he did it to him in practice. And I was on a line, and he wasn't, and he was in tears because then it's so competitive. Nobody will let you fill in for him. You know
Right.
what I mean? So when we would do certain line drills, I wouldn't take a drill sometimes for 15, 20 minutes, and because I got tired of begging guys, "Hey, can I take a shift? Can I take a shift?" So that was one of the things that I learned. But yeah, we had some unbelievable guys on that team, and we went to the finals and ended up losing to Calgary. But I went out for every warm-up, and I actually played seven games and I didn't even play a shift. That's the other thing I've never done to a player is not play him on a shift because you know, you're in the lineup, you deserve to play.
I mean, that Adams division too, when you think about those arenas, you know, Quebec
Yeah,
Nordiques, I mean,
the
everyone wanted
Bruins.
to take down the Montreal Canadiens. Yeah, the Boston-Montreal rivalry. I mean, you see these guys like, I mean, I remember I used to go as a kid and you know, I grew up in the Boston area and it was amazing. And then you'd have the fog raising up and you'd have to skate around real quick in the old Boston Gardens. And so you had the Nordiques, you had the Sabres.
Yeah.
Sabres were a real good team, Hartford Whalers. So some really good teams in that Adams division.
It was fun. My first year, they traded Kordick and they called me up. And we were in preseason game, and Quebec had called up all their tough guys. And this is a kind of a funny, kind of a street fighting type thing. So John was all pissed off that they called up all their guys. And he kept saying stuff to me about why did they bring up all these guys? And finally I said to him, I said, "Hey John, I said, you only get fight three times and you can only fight one guy at a time. So just, you know, let's go." And he didn't throw a check and they ended up trading him, you know, 10 days or, you know, within a month, they ended up trading him. But
Wow.
he thought just, you know, one of his problems, he just thought way too much about fighting than he should have, even though he was a great fighter. You know what
Yeah.
I mean? He just didn't want to lose, you know. And sometimes when you fight other good fighters, sometimes you're going to lose a fight that, you know, you just try not to, you know, you hope not to get hurt. But anyway.
Well, anytime someone plays with Craig Ludwig, who's one of our DFW characters.
Yeah, he's a character.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you get to spend any time with Craig in Montreal?
Well, yeah, he was there, but he was married with kids, so you know, like he didn't live like we lived. I lived in an apartment building with Shane Corson, and you know, I hung around with the single guys, the married guys, you know. But I mean, I was friends with him, and then his kids played for me, and he helped out with the team, you know. And the last year, the last championship we won with his sons, both his sons playing. You know, I asked him to come out, you know, and work with the defense a little bit. So he's a character. He is a character, though.
So you're saying that
Those
there's a
stupid
statue?
shin pads. Those shin pads he had were
Oh
so
yeah.
obnoxious.
Yeah. Do you know the story of the shin pads in the Hall of Fame?
Well, I saw him. I saw it on there, but I used to wonder why he would wear those shin pads were so ridiculous. But like in Chelios, he wore the same skates for like, every year he'd wear the same skates. He wouldn't get new skates, and
Yeah.
I don't know how,
Those shin pads are actually from North Dakota. And
Oh, I believe it.
he never wanted to change them, so they just naturally expanded. And because of all the shot blocking, the NHL Hall of Fame kept calling him and calling him, and he didn't return the call. And so finally he picks up the phone when they call and they said, "Hey, Craig, we'd like to have the shin pads to display in the NHL Hall in the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto." And he said, "That's great, just one condition." And they said, "What is it?" And he said, "Take me with the shin pads." And they never called back. So, thought that was a great story. Luds has such great stories.
He's got a lot of stories.
All right, so in your playing days, and probably see it as a coach now, can you remember instances where you fought someone or you were chirping someone pretty good, even as a coach, and next thing you know, he's either on your team or he's one of your teammates?
Well, a lot of times, it was just business. Like I would fight friends or I would fight guys that I, one time I fought a guy that I played with in Toledo and him and his wife made lunch for me and then we got in a fight that night. And a lot of times, because if your both job was to play that way, and I had a pretty short fuse, but I remember Lyndon Byers. I literally, man, if I could have killed him, I hated him. And I wanted to, I wanted to smack his face every time I saw him. And I met him and he's a really funny guy.
Yeah.
But I literally, like I hated him. And he just died recently. It's too bad. He just
Yeah.
died. But he was one of those guys that, man, every time that we bumped into or came within inches of each other, the gloves were coming off. Basil McRae was another one that I used to joke with Basil, if you fought him on the ice, then you had to be ready to fight him in the penalty box because he was always, lipping off. But Basil's a smart guy, so he was always making some kind of smart ass comment. But I was pretty much the same way.
I did want to touch on one more thing as far as your playing career, because the last stop as far as the NHL, one game with the Minnesota North Stars. But as a kid from Minnesota, that must have been an absolutely great feeling donning that sweater.
Yeah, especially, like I never planned on playing pro hockey. I mean, a lot of Canadians and a lot of people now, they're growing up playing, through the youth hockey. And I didn't have my first pair of new skates till I was in 10th grade. I bought them with my caddy money, but I never planned on, I was 5'2" in 10th grade. And, I never planned on having a pro career, but I always worked real hard and I loved being at the rink. I spent a lot of time. Back then we had outdoor ice. I would just skate every day after school, up until I'd come home for dinner and go back down to the rink. And so I just put a lot of time in, but I was never planning on playing. So when I did play for Minnesota, yeah, it was fun. It was fun to play that game. It was on the road in, we were playing Toronto.
You made the most of it. 9 penalty minutes in that game.
Yeah, Bob Gainey told me not to fight anymore after that. Because
Right.
we were losing, and Bob liked to have toughness, but he didn't want to send a message like some coaches, you're losing 5-1 and you want to make the team pay for beating you. You know what I mean? And Bob wasn't like that. So literally, after I had a fight he's just like, yeah. Because I started it. And he's like, yeah, you don't have to do that. And I'm like, okay, Bob, but I know that's why you called me up. So.
Well, I love what you said about the Florida Panthers-like style that you institute with the Allen Americans, because it was a great time when you were coaching there, and I'm excited that you're bringing it back. It's a real strong brand of hockey and also really good as far as, pro tickets are expensive. So if you want to take the family to a hockey game, Allen has some terrific promotions, great parking lots around the arena, and the arena itself is a really, really cool arena. AllenAmericans.com. And don't forget about Coach's wife, because she's got some real cool gear at the souvenir shop, right, Coach?
Yeah, she's got some really cool stuff coming in, and she got a new supplier that really came up with a lot of ideas when we were in Athens, and Miles just loved some of the stuff, and so she's got some cool stuff coming in. Just got some polos in, just came in, some golf shirts came in just the other day that they put in the store, and I know that some people have started buying them this morning is what she told me. So there's going to be some fun stuff to if you know, if you're a hockey fan, an Americans fan, there's going to be some cool stuff coming in.
Season tickets, they have partial season tickets, they have promotions that you can get involved in. Obviously, the season opener coming just a few months away. Really excited. I think you open up with Kansas City, so that'll be good. It's going to be a great season. I'll let you get back to working the phones, Coach. When I called him, he was working. He's busy. He's trying to bring a championship back to Allen. Hey, this was fun. I love going back down memory lane, and your story is a real good one, Coach, as far as where you've played, some of the players that you've played with. I know so many former players think so highly of you, Coach. It's so great to have you on, and welcome back to DFW.
Well, I appreciate it, Gavin. And yeah, we will have an entertaining team. Like, we'll be offensive and skilled and physical. And, you know, and then the other thing, when you come to a sporting event, you know, you actually get to talk to your family. You get to talk to your kids. You can discuss things that are going on. So I think that's one of the things that people forget about, what you can do when you go to, you know, a sporting game.
Nice. Absolutely. By the way, you've never gotten in a fight as a coach, right? We'll leave that. I love that. That's a tease for our next interview.
Yeah, we can talk about that later.
I absolutely love it. Coach, thanks so much again. Really appreciate it.
All right.
All right. Thanks. Allen Americans. Yeah, you too. Right, AllenAmericans.com. Go check out the Allen Americans, and that's going to do it for another episode of Spits and Suds. Boy, what a fun episode this has been, and we'll have another episode for you soon. Until next time, everyone, have a great day, everyone.